Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 204, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Thursday, October 7th, 2021. It is National Chocolate Covered Pretzel Day, an important day for me and mine, because I do love a good chocolate covered pretzel, as long as they're salted. You know, yeah. I need that salty in there.
What's sometimes your favorite one you'll buy at the store?
I mean, flips. I'm here for
anything. Oh, I knew you were going to go flipping out.
Yeah, I'll go for anything.
I like bespoke, too. You know, like sometimes you see the ones you'll go to a boardwalk and it'll be like the pretzel rod, like just a straight shooter.
Where
and
they then do they have only half of it to prove to you this is actually a pretzel.
Right. Not a carbon rod or something.
Yeah. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. the best part of vaccine up. No swimmers in your cum. That's courtesy of Chris Mackling. A new take on the fact that the vaccine, you know, makes you infertile. The fact, I'm going to put that in quotes because I'm still doing my own research on that. But, you know, Chris is pointing out here that that could just be birth control. That could be something that you see as a positive. Anyways, I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
What's with these homies soaking in girls? Why don't they wanna thrust? How did they ever do it with guys when they just couldn't bust? But you know I'll jump so that you could hump. I won't close my eyes.
Okay, shout out to Hi Morb for that wonderful Buddy Holly Weezer LDS soaking jump pump crossroads, aka.
Thank you.
Love that song.
Beautiful work. I mean, soaking's a thing that's been around for a while, but I feel like it's just re-entered the zeitgeist in a way. Soaking's here to stay. I'm calling.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who, like a close friend of mine in high school, he played football at Utah. I remember the first fucking break back
He was like, yo,
oh, really?
They'd be floating and shit. I'm like, what is this? So in a way, yes. It feels like that moment when Twitter's like, Ray J's Brandy's brother?
And I'm like,
y'all
right.
Just heard
We've
about
been
this
on
stuff?
The soaking shit. All right, Miles. Well, we are thrilled to be joined once again in our third seat by a brilliant comedian, writer, and actor who's written for and appeared on Comedy Central and ABC. Ever heard of him?
Yep.
His stand-up albums, The Blake Album, Stuffed Boy, and Live from the Pandemic debuted at number one on iTunes and Amazon, and his album, 12 Years of Voicemails from Todd Glass to Blake Wexler, charted on Billboard. Ever heard of it?
Ooh. Yep.
Ooh. Please welcome the hilarious, the chaotic, Blake Wexler!
Never heard of him.
It's pipeline time. This is Blake Wexler, a.k.a. the Wexon Valdez, a.k.a. the oil spill thrill, a.k.a. the barge in charge, a.k.a. the fossil fuel ghoul, a.k.a. smelly Ellie. No need for hysteria. It's the affected area. Thank you so much for having me. I missed you guys. I do, all joking aside, none of those were jokes, but now I do want to be serious. It's great to see you guys. I miss you.
Thank you. So, yeah, the feeling is mutual, man. It's funny. I'm like, where you been? You're like, I'm around. I'm like, then I'm fucking up. Because I've been needing to hear from you, Blake.
It goes both ways. So I can reach out as well.
Yeah.
I do love that Blake went timely with his AKAs, with the oil spill, and we're still stuck on soaking and other cum-based stories weeks ago, months ago.
I was going to write on the Discord where everyone, like a lot of people submit AKAs. I'm like, y'all, I think we're approaching peak cum.
Right.
And we may need to switch gears. So AKA writers, I challenge you for next week. We'll get a few more days into this.
I was pretty.
What's that? Not yet.
Switching it up.
Yeah. What is oil, though, if not the Earth's cum? So I think we are, honestly. Mm. And who said that? Was that R.L. Stein?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah,
I believe that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
R.L. Stein.
The first sentence in Say Cheese and Die, I think, in Goosebumps.
Yeah, that's right. Thought it was, you know, he was dedicating the book to someone. But no, it was actually just sage wisdom.
Could you imagine just like those pages that are just dedicated, just a serious book? And the first one you look at, you're like, isn't oil just the Earth's cum? And you're like, what
age group is this book for? Who is this for?
This reprint of Infinite Jest is something else.
Infinite Jizz. I'm sorry. What?
I dropped something. Oh, here he is.
Yes. We're back.
Chaos Boy is in town.
Young Chaos.
Young Chaos. Lil Chaos. Blake, you are coming to us from the streets of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. I am.
Nah. What's good, man? What's new in Philly?
Philly's great. We had trash pickup day today, which was one of my favorite days of the week. You know, you clean the slate, start over, pile that stuff up again. Found a dead squirrel on the windshield of my car, which I took personally. So
it had that note on it that said, fuck you, Blake, you're next.
It said, you did this to me, Blake Wexler. And then the first four numbers of my social, where generally it's the first three or the last four.
Know.
They did first four this time. But dead vermins and trash day notwithstanding. Philadelphia is great.
Yeah. You've painted a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm a wordsmith. And I think being a wordsmith, I like drawing pictures with my words. So,
Well, wonderful. Do you ever do that thing where you look at your, like when you take your cans out, you're like, man, I can get another week out
my
of this.
Cans? They're called breast smiles. Jesus Christ.
Hey, you got your cans, bro. There's garbage in here for the garbage pickup. I did that the other day. I'm like, I'm such a dedicated bringer out of my garbage cans. Mm-hmm. Like, there'll be one can in it, and I'll be like, oh, they should probably take this. But part of me is like, that seems like a waste of everyone's energy. If like sometimes if it's like less than a quarter full on trash day, I'm like, I'll save them. I'll save it.
I'll do the same thing where it's like, well, if I just hold on to this for another week, cans don't generally smell because the smell is my worst fear, but in just period, the smell of my trash is my worst fear. But no, you're right. With
across cans, all the spectrum of your fears.
Brain aneurysm, earthquake, all those distant numbers to the smell of my cans. But yeah, no, can wise. I mean, if it just piles up for another week, wait 3 weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Depends on the heat, you know, because I've chanced it before and I nearly like ended my own life with like a bunch of old shrimp that was in a garbage
can. Oh, no.
Yeah. Miles.
Like in the heat.
Not in front of Blake, Miles. Not in front of Blake.
Guys, biggest fear. What did we talk about?
I'm sorry. My nose hairs like fell out of my nose. Like I remember it's like the ammonia was like, there's some dead bodies we need to resurrect to bring them by this can.
that's some no crustacean talk from now on. Yeah. As a friend. You. If you guys could be friends and not talk about, or mollusks.
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Blake, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, a couple of things we're talking about. We're going to talk about Mark Zuckerberg, the spoke Zuck. He spoke on, you know, all these, you know, wild accusations being thrown at Facebook. And he doesn't even like it's like these people are on like a different planet, man. Like what are they even talking about?
You guys agree with this? Really?
It's a shame.
They say that about the great work we do?
Come on. We're going to talk about the January 6th witnesses who seem like they're hoping to run out the clock on having to testify in front of the Congressional January 6th committee because they have nothing to hide. So they're just going to ignore their subpoenas. We're going to talk about Havana Syndrome. There's a newly unclassified report that we'll talk about the implications of that. We will talk about the war on Christmas, which the libs have already started. And we will talk about why the Zodiac Killer has not been identified, finally.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
Uh-oh.
I just saw that on Twitter. There's so many Zodiac Killer jokes.
Yeah.
You'll have to catch me up on these things. I wish I gave a fuck about the Zodiac Killer.
That's one of those things where people just wrote a million Zodiac jokes and then they didn't get them all out and they've just been holding on to them. And then anything tangentially related to the Zodiac Killer, they get to just unleash those jokes they've had on ice for the past however many years.
It is like my OJ good friend too. Drafts.
Yes.
That's as good of an explanation as anything I've been able to come up with for why that story has like blown up, because it's the claim to like they've solved it. They have, these are the people who we would trust to solve it is non-existent. I'm totally confused by how this has become a thing. But before we get to any of that shit, Blake, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
I will tell you that. I just wanted to give Miles props, God forbid, real quick, where he made me laugh so hard in the intro when you referred to a pretzel rod as a straight shooter. It's such a weird thing to say. I lost it.
I don't know. I'm not really, my vocabulary has been altered by many drugs, so I arrive at different ways to describe things, than most people.
Jack just took it as just, oh, that's a completely normal way to refer just a straight shooter.
One of the straight shooters.
Yeah, straight shooters. You got the curvy ones.
Curvy, shooters, nuggies. There's all kinds of pretzels. The pretzel taxonomy.
I get. It's a strange world. Okay, my search history, was that your question that you asked 6 seconds ago that I don't remember? I searched Richard Gere, Bill Clinton. Because I was watching that impeachment show and we were like 2.5 episodes in, my fiance and I turned to her and I said, oh, I can't believe they got Dick Gere. And she just kind of ignored it because she thought it was like a dick joke. And then after the episode, I searched like, oh, wow, like I wonder, is he like how many episodes, like has he ever done something like this? And then it wasn't Richard Gere. It's Clive Owen who was playing it. And for 3 whole episodes of the show, I thought Bill Clinton was played by Richard Gere and had not a clue in hell. Like if I was to bet the safety of my loved ones and my dog, I'd be like, yeah, it's Richard Gere, clearly. But no, it's not Richard Gere. It's Clive
Dick
Owen.
Gere. I mean, I also like how you went like real familiar, too. You're like, oh, Dick Gere, huh?
Right, right. Well, you got to keep it interesting around the house.
Were you able to find any other people making the same mistake as you? Like that's always important when I make a mistake is to be like, well, a lot of other people. Like this has to be a trending search term. Right. I will just, say that I can't find anybody else making this mistake.
I was too busy looking up brain bleeds and, other serious medical issues to look into the rest of it. But yeah, no, that is a good way. Do you have one like that, Jack, where one time you thought this and then a bunch of people? Like, I haven't seen anyone think Richard Gere for this. I don't even know if the guy's still alive. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. It's actually impossible to know.
Yeah, there's no way to know for sure.
How could you verify something like that?
No, absolutely.
I have a couple of these every day. My latest was just coming to the conclusion that everything is fruits. There are no vegetables, and people were quick to point out a bunch of trends of that nature. So what I do, Blake, is I come on this show and just talk about how I'm wrong about everything, and then people are like, "Yeah, me too."
Nice.
And yeah, that's how I.
Yeah, this is all a ruse just for Jack to feel better about it. I'm like, "What do we talk about this other thing?" Jack, he's like, "Nah, I can't believe I didn't know about this." Anyone else?
Anyone else?
Yeah, I think the closest I did was like, I didn't realize it was Gillian Anderson in The Crown playing Margaret Thatcher the whole time.
Interesting.
And it didn't even register. It was one of those things. I accepted the performance as it was, and it was so strong. I didn't even question who the performer was. I was like, this is Margaret Thatcher in The Crown.
Margaret Thatcher as herself in The Crown.
Yeah. And I don't know why it never occurred to me. Normally I'd be like, wow, this performance is great. I think on some level it was so disarming. I went further and I was like, this is a reality show. I think these are like, this is very verite stuff.
It's Margaret Thatcher was so weird that you think it's a bad performance before you like look up a clip of her. You're like, oh, that's literally what she was like. Like that's how she spoke in a very, very affected way. Blake, what is something you think is overrated?
Subtitles when you're watching television shows. If you're watching the show in your language, like in the language that you speak, like if you're watching a show in another language you don't understand, by all means, put subtitles on it. It's just like, I can context clues this probably and understand.
You're like, happening. Hey, I got to learn the hard way.
Yeah. It's immersive.
Yeah.
But no, I know a lot of people, and I do this myself, where, you know, either you don't want the volume on too loud, because volume on things like swings in such an insane way when you're watching something, where it could be people whispering and then there's like a war scene and it's so fucking loud you got to like turn the volume down real quick so you don't get evicted. But so anyway, that was a tangent that I don't know how I got there, but my point is that I think, you know, I know sometimes we'll do subtitles if it's like an English show, for instance, so you don't like, you can't pick up on accents very well.
Your peaky is blinder.
Peaky, the blinder's peaky. And but in general, I think like a lot of people leave it on. Like I know a lot of people leave subtitles on. Take it off, you know, take it off. Enjoy the show. Take in the visuals. Don't read the show if you don't have to.
I see. I like it. I like it on.
Well, sometimes. Fuck me.
No. Well, you know, that's what I said. You know, I guess that I'm glad you came to fully implode your whole appearance here on the show. So we'll never have
to deal
with it again.
Happen eventually.
Yeah, I know. But what better way than this? But for me, it's mostly because like I'll be high and sometimes my comprehension is better if I'm reading dialogue at certain times, or if, yeah, I think that's usually it. Or like in a case like Deadwood, like I had to keep the subtitles on because everything was so fast paced and colloquial. I did not know what was going on.
That's a good point. Yeah, there are exceptions. That's a very good point.
There are exceptions. Thank you so much for granting me a religious exemption for that.
Anytime.
Yeah, sometimes it will spoil what you're watching, like the reveal will come in the subtitles before it's actually spoken.
Yeah.
Like when I was watching Old Yeller, I saw Bang in brackets before they shot the dog. And I was like, fuck. It was just a double whammy. It'll also spoil comedy too, like in a like a joke real quick where it's like, but you'll start laughing before, you know, if it's a really good show, and then they do the joke. It's a very odd way to digest something. But
I recently ruined like a really funny punchline in The Other Two for having the subtitles on.
Yeah,
and I was like, no, probably would have hit harder if I saw that performance rather than like as if I was like reading a script. And yeah, to that point, I definitely agree with comedies. The timing of the subtitles does not honor the timing of the delivery. So sometimes the jokes land a bit better when you hear them delivered.
Exactly. Yeah.
I read them out loud while I'm watching it to, you know, let my wife know that I predicted it, you know. Like I knew
we'll
he was
do
say
that sometimes too, just to mess with the other. But it'll be a dead scene, you know, like a dead scene where it's not like super high impact. Or just reading it out, it's just the most annoying thing that you can
possibly do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whispering it like really loud. No, I've never loved you. I can't believe
or mouthing it.
Yeah.
We're all mouthing it right now, by the way. We don't,
It's a podcast, but they've been robbed of that.
Yes.
Squid Game, I've watched now half of the third episode. This is how I watch TV.
Yep.
In, you know, with kids, is you watch until they wake up or, you know, you pass out sitting up. But it's, you really can't fuck with your phone all that much while you're watching a show that does require subtitles to understand.
Good point, I feel like. Yeah, you got to respect the material. That second episode, and I don't know if you, I'm not going to try and spoil anything, but there was like a moment where there's this other character and I was like, I looked down for a second and missed all the context around this character. And I'm like, what the wait, where'd this guy come from? And I was like, I had to stop and go back like 5 minutes to realize. So,
yeah. Can I tell you something? I've never told anyone. At the first time I saw No Country for Old Men in the theater, I just spaced out at the end when he was doing that speech. And then it like ended and everyone was like, wow. And I'm like, I had no clue. Like,
you
what
didn't
happened.
Read
I had no idea. Like, 4 years, like for maybe 4 or 5 years. Everyone would talk about how great it was. I'm like, yeah, it was great. But I didn't know why it was great.
Oh, the Tommy Lee Jones speech.
Yeah, the Tommy Lee Jones speech.
Yeah, yeah.
Did not hear a word of it. Like, was staring, but did not hear a single word of it.
Right. Oh, shit.
What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated, owning as much underwear as possible. Like, and because whenever I do laundry, it is almost always because I run out of, like, clean boxer brief. I don't know why I felt a need to clarify what type of underwear, but yeah, boxer briefs.
Okay.
And what brand? Lucky Brand, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, when you find a brand that works, I think, you know, for me, I stick with it. And hopefully I'll, you know, get couple.
Not to make this a Lucky Brand commercial, why are you so brand loyal? What happened?
It's so, I mean, I have
good leg hole openings,
a thick, it is actually the smallest fly opening out of all of them.
It's almost jokey.
Yeah. I find it. Yeah. It's comforting in that way.
Makes me feel like a dime in there.
Yeah. to be honest, it is like, I have like a thicker ass and they're good for a thick ass. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll go, I'm in a similar situation.
Yes.
Thick thighed, and sometimes the waist won't be the same as what the leg holes need to be, and I'm like, you'll either be like this fucking super loose waist, but the leg holes fit right, or you're wearing something that your waist fits right, but you are like actively cutting off like your femoral artery is being constricted by the underwear. So I feel that. Okay, I'm gonna look into that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Try it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have 4 pairs of boxer briefs, twins, that are...
Total of all underwear, just 4 pairs.
So I have 4 that are, like, recent, and, you know, I really like those and will do laundry to get those. And then I have, like, 20 pairs that are, like, disintegrating that I don't like.
What the fuck?
Totally. I need to change those out, but I've
is
not
that,
done
okay, it. Yeah. Quick question for this triumvirate we have here. Is this due to watching your father wear disintegrated underwear? Because my dad, one of my earliest memories has been like, I think my dad is in a bad place because his underwear is disintegrating. And I remember early on, my mom was like, you need new underwear. But he was like, no, it's fine. And I'm like looking, like the second you said that, I was having a moment where I looked at a pair of underwear and I go, nah, I can get a few more out of these.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I don't know if that's learned or not.
No, it wasn't learned for me. My dad was on top of his underwear game. And you know, that apple fell real far from the tree.
I think it is also the fact that no one sees it, really. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where if you had a tattered shirt, people would be like, this guy's like is in a bad place. They're not doing well, you know.
Right.
But like tattered underwear, it's like, well, you know, it's still not necessarily uncomfortable. But you know, recently I was like, you know what? You have worked hard enough for a long enough that you don't need to have like this B team of like rags. You know what I mean? Like in the thing. So, but Jack, I can totally relate to what you're saying as well.
Yeah. Mm. It's just a thing like I don't think about, I guess.
I just rock the vaporware sometimes, you know, just falling apart, threadbare, barely hanging onto the waistband. And then sometimes I've like rage ripped them up while they're on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just like, it's almost out like, of anger at the...
Yeah, it's like being in one of those like porcelain smashing rooms, ripping off your own underwear, like, like from
I've
the
done
waistband.
That with a t-shirt before. That is actually very satisfying.
It's very childish.
Out on a t-shirt. Yeah.
But like, shredding your underwear off too. Shredding I don't know, man.
Wait, do you have your pants on while you're shredding it off? So you just like pull it?
It's a trick.
Oh, yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Wow.
That's how I used to do on most of my first dates.
Yeah. The...
The closer, he called that. That's how he closed the deal. He'd tear off his own underwear.
And I mean,
pants.
You knew very quickly that someone would be like so put off by it that it ended there, or they would lie about being put off and say that they had an appointment that they forgot they had.
So. And those were the only two scenarios.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have an appointment. Or someone's like, oh my God, no. What was that?
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about the news.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And Mark Zuckerberg, you know, there's been a lot of negative talk, negative Nellies out here in the news talking trash about Facebook. And Mark Zuckerberg apparently just found out about it. And he's like, what? Huh? How is This is not the company that I know.
No.
So he has decided to post on, looks like on Facebook, defend the company. And yeah, he just sounds like he is a dictator who just through like sheer will is trying to convince people that none of these problems exist. Nothing.
It's very much a gaslight job, like on his own employees, because these people, they're doing the fucking work, fool. Like these aren't just like lemmings who are like, please give us our, like, if you're working in these different departments, like Frances Haugen was, they know exactly what's going on, because she's saying these people are like in a lot of these other subgroups are getting upset that there isn't action. So he's saying, look, his first part of the letter is him talking about like, oh, that was a big boner on Monday, huh? With WhatsApp going down. And then he's like, I'm sure many of you have found the recent coverage hard to read because it just doesn't reflect the company we know. And again, he will not reference Frances Haugen or refer to a whistleblower or anything of that nature. Quote, we care deeply about issues like safety, well-being, and mental health. It's difficult to see coverage that misrepresents our work and our motives. At the most basic level, I think most of us just don't recognize the false picture of the company that is being painted. I'm sorry about that. He goes on to say, many of the claims don't make any sense. If we wanted to ignore research, why would we create an industry-leading research program to understand these important issues in the first place? If we didn't care about fighting harmful content, then why would we employ so many more people dedicated to this than any other company in our space, even ones larger than us?
I'm sorry, who is larger than them?
I don't know, right?
The social media space?
Like, yeah, what, Google? I guess because of ads, maybe? Uh-huh. If they're looking as an ad business, but even then, that's a weird claim. Even the bigger guys are doing stuff not as good as us. Like, you're the fucking giant of the land.
I love that he got a brag in there, too. You know, like, whenever someone's writing an apology and they find a way to brag as well, like, we have industry-leading research. It's like, you don't have to put that in there.
But it's funny because there's allegations about how research has been wound down. And Frances Haugen was even saying that, like, Amy Klobuchar, they're both touching on this fact that some of the data is not available to people who are actually trying to research a lot of this shit. So that's not really true, Mark. And also, like, just having a research body doesn't mean you're doing it to fucking, like, Exxon was researching global warming. They're not out here being like, why would we have industry leading research? It's because they have to know what the fuck their product does in the real world. And they're just like, okay, fucking don't talk about that shit.
Yeah.
So, nice
based on like all the reading about in like the internal dynamics of Facebook, they do the research. They hire people like Haugen who do the research and make these recommendations. And it's not usually, I don't think they fire them. They just ignore the fuck out of them and promote the people who come up with ways to, you know, increase engagement. Like it's a very passive way of just, you know, dealing with a problem by not dealing with it. Basically. Right.
Speaking of research body, if I was to describe Mark Zuckerberg's physique, I'd call it a research body. Like that's how he looks.
Yeah.
His other defense is also really lame. He says, quote, and if social media were as responsible for polarizing society as some people claim, then why are we seeing polarization increase in the U.S. while it stays flat or declines in many countries with just as heavy use of social media around the world?
Huh.
Well, maybe because you've been here longest.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of time, because it's not like you haven't seen like other political unrest explode out of people using Facebook. So I don't exactly know what his claim is, because he's clearly avoiding things like ethnic cleansing that would be organized via Facebook, because that's not polarizing. It's just another very selective bit of data he's using to defend himself, when I think it's just clear that he's desperate and this is all looks just fucking terrible.
Yeah. And I do think that is probably an effective line of argumentation, because it's true that like social media isn't the only reason that polarization is increasing in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But it is an ingredient. And also, like you said, there have been plenty of incidents where it escalated wildly and incredibly dangerously in other countries.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, people are like, have you looked in what's going on in, you know, Myanmar? And like, okay, whatever. We'll just look away from the glaring lights. And then this other one is just fantastic. The argument that we deliberately push content that makes people angry for profit is deeply illogical. We make money from ads, and advertisers consistently tell us they don't want their ads next to harmful or angry content. And I don't know any tech company that sets out to build products that make people angry or depressed. The moral, business, and product incentives all point in the opposite direction.
Right.
Okay, that may be, but I'm not sure. Again, this is another thing where, of course, advertisers aren't like, yeah, man, put my shit next to like the most violent fucking video. The whole thing is you go to Facebook because of clicks. Any advertiser online goes to a media property for clicks or engagement. And like, just as Francis Haugen said, more engagement is the thing that you can hold up in front of people who are trying to buy ads. And they go, oh, fuck yeah. So it's popping over there. That's where I'm trying to put my advertiser, where there's a lot of activity. So even this one, it's just so deeply illogical that this would. How could that occur?
Yeah, it's easy to recategorize like things like that and be like, well, that's not designed to make people angry. They're interested in it for this other reason. Like it's just such a vague explanation for like that allows them to just sort of recategorize things and let themselves off the hook.
Yeah.
It's also a very inhuman response to a deeply human issue. You know what I mean? Where like these issues that people like the collateral damage that social media does are mental. It's mental health. It's deeply human issues. And when you respond to it in such an analytical, you know, like computerized way,
yeah, like
it completely. Manhattan. Yeah. It just shows the exact problem.
Yeah,
the situation.
Right. Like, well, no, that the money comes in and that business is doing well and we're not actively trying to do. Yeah, maybe not deliberately, but
right.
It's you're the way things are set up. That's where you're incentivized. So what are you saying here? But the last paragraph is like sounds like some evil villain that runs like this dystopian society. Oh, wait, maybe that is just him. He says, quote, when I reflect on our work, I think about the real impact we have on the world. The people who can now stay in touch with their loved ones, create opportunities to support themselves and find community. This is why billions of people love our products. I'm proud of everything we do to keep building the best social products in the world and grateful to all of you for the work you do here every day.
There you go.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know. I'm really curious to see what his inner thought process is around this, because I'm sure that Richard Blumenthal thing where he's like, yeah, Mark Zuckerberg needs to get in here and explain a lot of these things out loud and not just be like, Senator, that's highly illogical to say that. So I don't know what that would look like, but
yeah,
it's hard. I don't know how you dance around really direct questions given Francis Haugen's testimony.
And to just equate the fact that they get money for ads and advertisers like keep paying with there not being a social problem is just so like, you know, it's just the most base level, like market make good, everything good
right.
gets market bucks. And the thing that the reason that they are so dominant in advertising is the level of data that they've collected about anyone. It has nothing to do with like why people are on the site in the first place. Like they have unprecedented amounts of information and like these psychological profiles of people that are, you know, things that if you had told an advertiser about 20 years ago, they would have fucking shot in their pants. Like it's the best thing that they could possibly imagine.
Right.
And yeah, the fact that people are willing to pay for that has nothing to do with like the idea that you're doing it for the right reason or using it in a non-evil way. Sorry for the shot in the pants thing. I was just picturing Don Draper just hearing about Facebook and, you know.
The what? Oh my God. Yeah, truly a shot in the pants.
Let's talk about January 6th Commission or the Congressional January 6th Committee, because there are some pretty key players, Dan Scavino, Mark Meadows, Steve Bannon, Kash Patel, who are all Trumpers that have been subpoenaed to testify in front of the
Congressional January 6th committee, and they're just like kind of ignoring it.
Yeah.
They're just like, well,
they
know.
Say of like everyone except Dan Scavino, they think has been served. But apparently Dan Scavino is just acting like a regular old Prince Andrew in his attempts to duck process servers and just going to like a hidey hole to be like, I don't know anything about him, so you'll have to serve someone else. But despite all of that happening, it looks like even if they're served, their game plan is just to fucking ignore the subpoenas because Trump told them to. And, this, you know, the same thing, blah, 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 executive privilege. Do they have a plan? There's like in this Guardian article, people are like, doesn't really seem like there's a plan here, more so that they would probably just try and run out the fucking clock and hope the Republicans take the House back by the midterms. And then what January 6th commission are we talking about?
Yeah.
So bit of a cynical play from them, but I expect nothing less from people who are, you know, hell bent on just, you know, overturning an election. But yeah, you know, people in the committee, though, have said from the beginning, like, this isn't going to be the same as like when Trump was in the White House, how we're going to handle executive privilege. Sure, Mark Meadows and Scavino, they definitely worked in the West Wing. So there is an element there of executive privilege. But in terms of like using that to like not comply with this subpoena, they have been saying like we will issue criminal referrals, like if we're being ignored. I hope that's what happens. Part of me just looking at the data set of the American legal system and how powerful white men are able to get away with anything, I'm a little bit worried that might not happen. But it also seems like, you know, many of the people on the committee are really interested in at least trying to find some semblance of accountability. But it's like one of those things where you just kind of like, well, wait and see, I guess.
Yes.
Speaking of powerful white men, I had a very scary situation recently where I saw Steve Bannon wearing the same coat that I own. Oh. And it was absolutely horrifying, where I was really, really excited about my new coat and then saw Steve Bannon wearing, it was a barber coat, wearing the same brand. And I'm like, well, I don't know what the fuck to know, what I think about anything anymore, to be true. I don't know. I guess if I have the same fashion sense as that pig, I should probably just let someone else shop for me.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's a cool coat.
You are wearing three collared shirts right now on top of each other.
I am on top of each other. The middle collar is popped. The others are appropriately pressed down.
Yeah, yeah, he really loves that coat, huh?
It's disgusting.
Yeah. I feel like he has on like 5 J. Crew outfits at any given time, just like on top of each other.
Yeah.
So
I guess it maybe looks more ballin' if you wear like multiple pieces of clothing. You're like, just so you know, like you may have $300 worth of clothing on, but I have $7,000 worth of clothing on because I'm wearing 14 shirts and 13 pairs of pants.
Yeah.
So
he's actually a very slender man. We just couldn't tell because of the
he's
amount
in great
of clothing
shape. You'd never know.
Yeah.
He's been wearing the whole time.
Just big fear of his losing his clothes. It's his big greatest fear. Steve Bannon. That in a
his
brown in a brown America.
His greatest fears are doing the right thing is number one, and then losing his
and
clothes.
Losing all my clothes. Just a serious interview, and like, I mean, it's. I know it may sound weird, but if you've ever lost all your clothes, it's a frightening prospect, and I just won't allow myself. I just won't allow that to happen to me.
Steve, what happened? What? How did you lose your clothes?
I went to a wedding. Look, they lost my baggage. I had to wear a suit that was a little too baggy for me. And it was ever since then, I've vowed to always wear all my clothes.
People kept talking about the emperor has the emperor's new clothes around the Trump administration. He finally read it and was like, oh, no.
Completely misinterpreted.
Interpreted and went the opposite direction.
Yeah. Just in case some of these are invisible, I want to guarantee no one sees me naked.
Yeah.
So I put 14 shirts.
All right. Let's take another quick break and we will be right back to talk Havana Syndrome. Havana, good time.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And so BuzzFeed released a declassified scientific review of the attacks that have been described as Havana Syndrome, that the attacks are being quotes because they found what we had suspected, what a lot of people have talked about, that the noises that they were associating with the attacks that first happened in Havana were crickets. Okay. And it was a declassified like State Department study. So it's not, this isn't like an outside researcher. This is like what they have learned themselves. Now, around this time, the Biden administration had started referring to Havana syndrome as unexplained health incidents, which kind of suggested they were backing off of the idea that they were deliberate attacks from, you know, adversaries. But because that became a story, they now have issued a new report that seemed to back in, like jump back into the, this is an attack camp. Mm-hmm. Because the people who, you know, are suffering the symptoms believe that they were attacked, and they're very sensitive, understandably, about
because
people.
We're in their country attacking them.
Right, exactly.
So you very much would be God on pins and needles. What the fuck? Oh, okay. I'm just a nurse. That's all I am. Not a CIA op.
But yeah, this Miami Herald piece about like this new direction quotes this is a trend, senior administration official, but no name. We need to believe our personnel who are coming forward. People are facing real symptoms. We are very conscious that people are experiencing something very real and it's having a real negative effect on their health. And we're seeing better health outcomes the sooner we can respond to that. So it's like they're trying to treat it as though it's a real thing, because it is, as we've talked about functional disorders, like it's a real thing that these people are experiencing real symptoms.
Right.
They're not just making them up, but that it is probably a neurological and, you know, a stress-based thing. And that is the thing. That explanation is very offensive to anybody who is suffering from this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this new article from Jacobin that just kind of puts this in the context of a bunch of different stories over the course of like the last 25 years that have been kind of adopted and just repeated by the mainstream media because they are, you know, they go in the direction of like helping America maintain an aggressive foreign policy. So they start with the Havana Syndrome reporting and just like all the different headlines that flatly state that Cuba attacked U.S. diplomats, which, you know, are generally CIA agents, and, you know, pointing out that anytime somebody is quoted, they're always quoted on background, or they're quoted as like a unidentified administration official. And they point out like this happened immediately after Trump indicated that his administration was going to go like hard in the opposite direction of the Obama administration, start being like really hostile towards Cuba. And then this event happened and they seized on it and started ramping up their negative foreign policy. But they kind of put it in the context of, you know, the New York Times, all these mainstream media outlets trusting military officials on things like Russiagate, which, in addition to being hostile towards Trump, was also allowed the military to make Russia seem more dangerous. And, you know, with a lot of the Iran reporting towards the end of the Trump administration, because they were trying to justify
shards of things. They're like, this says Iran on it. I don't know if what you want to do with that. Maybe do a war. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I can cook
Your
up
call,
some other evidence.
Yeah.
We don't have a pattern of doing that at all in this country.
Yeah. But it just reminds me of like the, you know, we talk about the news relying on police sources, and especially like for the local news, and like, you know, the guys with guns are the sources that they need to satisfy like audience bloodlust, and like their willingness to chase that bloodlust makes it so that we live in a world that we think is more dangerous and keeps people tuning in. And it also just creates this sort of feedback loop where, you know, the version of like the world that exists in the minds of the military and the police gets like filtered back to us over and over again. And it's just, you know, why is that? Like, after the most catastrophic like mistake in the, you know, recent history of America, going to war in Iraq, was like turned out to be based on a complete lie. You'd think that the mainstream media would have like altered their approach a little bit and been a little bit more willing to pump the brakes on shit like this. But it just seems like that is, as currently constituted, like unless something kind of dramatically changes, the mainstream media will let the military feed them, you know, bullshit.
Right.
Stories.
Well, I think that the tolerance for bullshit stories from the Pentagon is higher because they all have a relationship with each other. You know, it's like you have a homie who may bend the truth from time to time. You're like, okay, all right, that wasn't the best thing, but we're still good. We're still, because I know you. And it's the same thing. Like, you'll get burned by just straight up misinformation from the Pentagon. And still it's like, nah, it's all good. Like, don't worry about it. Like, we got to keep this thing going. You know, General Electric and the Pentagon do some good business together. And we're also NBC. So, you know, we'll, let's, you know, we're not going to make it too hot for anybody.
Yeah.
Can I be honest about this before we move on? Just real quick. I think this Havana syndrome is Jamaican me crazy.
Are you Havana tough time?
Get him out.
I'm having a tough time with this Havana syndrome. I swear to God.
Yeah.
I'm being serious.
I know. I know. Jamaican that's the problem. As we speak. That's the problem.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, so many reporters like get into the game because they would like want to be war correspondents. Like they have that like kind of, you know, they grew up on the idea of like going to Vietnam and being a reporter on that, or, you know, and it just, you know, as Blake, I think you were suggesting, is Jamaican them crazy.
It is. And that's exactly not even suggesting, just what I was pointedly saying. I think there's no room for interpretation there.
Yeah.
In college, I took a class called war reporting, and my professor was a former like embedded journalist, and he would always just show us movies, and we would never, we were like, it's like, why, like, you have the most interesting story in the world. Why wouldn't you just teach us? And then one day there was this girl in class who laid in a little too hard, being like, all you do is show us movies. Like, why don't you actually instruct us and tell us what it was like being there? And he went on a 45-minute story of one of the most emotionally traumatizing things I've ever heard in my entire life. The one time he ever told a story about his time in war, about how his guide was like murdered right in front of him. And then the whole class was like completely silent. And he goes,
yeah.
All right, I think we're done for the day. And then we're like, never asked him to talk about it again. We just watch movies for the rest of the semester because it was that. It's like, yeah, that's why he doesn't talk about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyway, just random side note. But seriously, that made me sane. The joke doesn't work when you change it. That made me sane.
You can workshop that one.
Yeah. We'll work on it and come back, report back to Zeitgang.
No, that's
about
the final
what
form.
We came up with. Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine.
I think it'll stand.
Just maybe.
Just
like,
give it a few years.
Yeah. We'll just kinda...
we'll come back. Pitchfork will do a they'll rescore that joke.
They'll rescore that joke. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the war on Christmas.
Finally,
God, that was the war that he was embedded in. By the way, I forgot to tell you, he was embedded in the war on Christmas.
The war on Christmas.
It's begun. Fauci said in an interview that it's just too soon to tell whether holiday gatherings will need to be restricted due to the pandemic for a second year in a row, which is
there he goes. Sound the alarms because he said that.
It doesn't really say anything. It's like a non-answer that doesn't really offer any specifics for what kind of restrictions they might put in place. But right-wing media, you know, I guess the fact that he was willing to answer a question, like, enraged right-wing media. The National Review wrote an article calling him a Grinch. And, you know, the Fox and Friends labeled Fauci a Grinch because they, you know, that was too good not to repurpose.
Yeah. It's fucking G-word. October.
It's October. They're talking Grinch and claimed that he was about to cancel Christmas based on his statement that it's too soon to tell. That seems fully fabricated, but so there are actually this year like legitimate threats to the Christmas traditions that they seem to hold so dear, such as, you know, supply chain problems that are going to make it so that it's harder to order presents for people, or, you know, the due to climate change, there are fewer Christmas trees available, and, you know, there's a shortage of truck drivers because as their wages have declined over the years, there's just been a problem with finding enough people to do that job. As the New York Times pointed out, it takes a peculiar form of logic to cut pay steadily and then be shocked that fewer people want to do the job. But that's what happened in the truck driving industry. And also because of, you know, slowdowns in manufacturing, there has been a slowdown in the production of fake Christmas trees. So these are all things that...
Grinch shit.
The real spirit of Christmas.
Yeah. And they're not interested in talking about that shit, though.
I mean, I think for their sake, like the Fox News set, you probably don't want to have all of your most of your unvaccinated base take airplanes to congregate, because they're already getting freaked out by the demographics of how the pandemic is affecting things. So what, there's going to be nah, man, get together, folks. Don't worry about any kind of spike in cases. Just do your thing, y'all. I don't know. This is just, it's fun watching them get so outraged.
And I mean, so were there things in place that actually stopped people from congregating, or was it just advice last year?
It's guidance,
they said,
right?
Yeah. Hey, don't do that.
I'm so confused what they, at the height of the pandemic, they just offered guidance. They're like, okay, big brother, nice try, asshole.
Oh, you said it's inadvisable to gather with elderly family when there aren't vaccines. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. They were just merely guidelines. But I think most people, because they were able to look around in their communities or just the news and be like, okay, so this is real and there's the potential for untold harm for people, that I will heed these guidelines.
Yeah. I mean, our writer, J.M. McNabb was pointing out that this actually kind of obscures how, focusing on the idea that he merely mentioned that he might at one point consider giving some travel advisories around Christmas. So that caused him to backtrack. And Fauci was like, no, you misinterpreted me. I'll be spending Christmas with my family, which is fucking
right.
Again, way too soon to tell whether that's a good idea or not. The CDC uploaded their 2021 holiday guidance to their website, which was picked up by multiple news outlets. But then they deleted it because they had actually put up last year's holiday guidance instead of this year's. And they haven't figured out what their guidance is going to be in 2021.
It's just a position for them to be in where they're like, oh, fuck, don't give them real advice or else they're going to accuse us of stuff. So let's water it the fuck down.
Yeah.
Because the situation is just so tenuous.
My uncle's a big Fox News person, and I put he's a bad guy, so I put coal in his stocking, and then he pulled it out, and he's like, this is such a great gift. This is my favorite fuel source. So don't give Fox News people coal in their stockings, because they'll completely misinterpret it as a gift.
Did he take a bite out of it, too? He's like, oh, you don't think I will? You don't think I will? Watch this, Blake.
He ate it like a jawbreaker.
Yeah.
Over the course of the next 3 days.
Joke's terrible. On you, asshole.
Yeah. Oh, my ulcer. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Yeah. They have ulcers. Cold, folks.
But, I mean, the big news story of the day is really of yesterday, I guess, that the Zodiac Killer has finally been identified, according to TMZ and, all the other main news sources, Fox News. So a group of researchers ID'd someone named Gary Francis Post, who died in 2018, as the Zodiac Killer. The degree to which this got picked up would have suggested it was a law enforcement agency that had done some sort of DNA linkage. This group is made up of former investigators and journalists. So essentially volunteers acting in no official capacity.
They're called the Case Breakers.
Right. They're called the Case Breakers. And one of their key theories is that Post also killed Sherry Jo Bates in 1966, whose death was followed by a Zodiac letter. And this is strange because the police were sent a Zodiac letter. So it's not nobody entertained this idea that it was from the Zodiac Killer and her murder was part of the Zodiac killings. But they looked into it and the letter was revealed to be a hoax, and an actual cold case units have already investigated that case and concluded that the murder is not connected to the Zodiac case. So they're just putting out a theory that most people believe to have been widely disproven and saying, well, here's your evidence. And then there's also the evidence that they're pointing to are photos from Post's dark room actually match scars on the police sketch of the Zodiac Killer, which it's just creases
lines on a forehead.
Yeah, it's just creases and a forehead.
Oh no.
Oh no. Come on, Case Breakers.
Yeah.
Come with some something heavier than this.
They also claim that they deciphered new code in the Zodiac letters that could only be cracked if you know Gary's full name, but they're not revealing that just yet. They're being proprietary about their solution.
Right. Are they the fucking cyber ninjas? My Pillow voting audit? Like, what the fuck is it? We got it. Just can't show you. We just can't show nobody right now. It's too explosive.
Tom Colbert, who is one of the main Case Breakers, his former job was working for a Hard Copy. So, I mean, he knows how to do a good tease.
Hell
to
yeah.
Get people, mm-hmm. You know. But he was also a story broker, which is somebody who, like, buys up compelling stories and, like, sells them to people to make movies. He sold the story rights for Fly Away Home and The Vow. So, you know, like, real hardcore grizzled crime-solving shit.
Yeah, gumshoe shit.
Yeah, and, yeah, it just feels weird that this is one that any news outlet, even if it's just TDZ, has like seized on and been like solved.
I the reason I just started wheezing and laughing is I'm following along in your document that you guys use. Oh, sorry to show a behind the scenes look at the show.
This is all coming from the top of my head, Blake.
I apologize. You're right, and
it's
apologize.
All loose scraps I keep by my desk.
This is the document that the 126 page document that I made for the show. And the Case Breaker team had, which I can't believe I just said without laughing my way through it, but at Case Breaker team, I'm like, oh, it says 8 following 2 followers on Twitter. You have a screen grab of it. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is probably taken from a few weeks. And now they have 14 followers. So
yeah
we're in the same place.
Yeah.
It's trending. It's trending. Yeah,
it's trending.
So basically they're saying that the Case Breakers, the evidence that they're working with has been debunked. So they're like, this is already built on like a false premise because you're already using debunked, like you're trying to connect dots that really aren't there.
Yeah. I mean, unless you like look at those forehead wrinkles, man. I'm just saying, like, those are pretty.
Well, they better come with that info that they say they're ready to decipher all the letters because we have to know his full name and only we do. I mean, okay. How many people did the Zodiac Killer kill exactly?
That's information that they have too, proprietary as well. Yeah, so you'd have to ask them.
They're holding back on. They say you'll never believe what we found out about how many people
victims.
The Zodiac killed.
Claimed to have killed 37. Mm. 5 confirmed dead, but possibly 20 to 28. Okay, interesting.
Just another example of their work on a famous story where people are, you know, very horny to identify a historical figure is Colbert got interested in the D.B. Cooper case and
that's thought, like bank robber, right?
Yeah. So D.B. Cooper was a bank robber who hijacked a plane and then jumped out of said plane after, like, you know, making everybody turn around, I guess, or go into the cockpit. Anyways, people think that he probably didn't survive jumping out of the plane, but, you know, it's very mysterious. They never found the body. And he thought he had figured out that it was this guy, Robert Rackstraw. And so Colbert approached Rackstraw, offered him $20,000 to participate. And when he refused, Colbert threatened to have him hounded forever. And then he started catfishing Rackstraw, who then in turn reverse catfished Colbert. And yeah, it just seems like real, real top level, you know,
mature
right. And, yeah. You know, top level investigative shit going on.
Right. Someone who's clearly not just trying to get the thing over the line by any means necessary. Right. True dedication to the truth. Unflinching. You know, rather right. than like, oh, fuck your life up if you don't admit you're D.B. Cooper so I can sell the rights to this.
Yeah. So that's the story of how the Zodiac Killer was identified.
Well, I'm glad to know that all the people who are talking about it, now I can finally, actually, every fucking tweet I see now.
Yeah. And, you know, JM, who is clearly into the story of the Zodiac Killer, is saying like they could be right about who it is, but publishing articles like definitively claiming the Zodiac case has come to an end based on these people's work, it seems a little premature. Right. Like I've read the headlines, then like I looked at the article and they were talking about these case breakers, like they were a known quantity that like I should be familiar with, and the fact that they have 14 followers, 15 now that I'm following them, is wild.
They do have their own logo, which is not nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of huge.
Yeah. It looks like Charles Barkley's like signature shoe logo.
Right.
Blake, is that a 34 in there? Yes.
As always, such a pleasure having you. Where can people find you and follow you?
The pleasure is all mine. And I can share it with you if you'd like. But I love being here. I always love doing this. I'm a huge fan of you guys. You can find me at Blake Wexler on everything. Every Wednesday in Philadelphia, I do a show at St. Stephen's Green, if you're in Philly. And then I have an exclusive for you guys. I have not announced this anywhere, but
exclusive.
Yep. We have on November 18th in Charleston, I'm recording my first 1 hour special. So at Theater 99. 1 hour stand-up special November 18th at 8 p.m. So, didn't even announce it on my own goddamn podcast, Blake's Takes for God's Sake. So, yeah, but anyway, that's coming in November 18th.
Nice.
All right. Coming to South CAC.
Mm.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yeah, there's a tweet from at Casebreaker Team, and it's the tweet is from Laurie Kilmartin at AnnieLaurie16, and she tweeted a picture of Kieran Culkin's character and Jerry from Succession holding one another, and Laurie just wrote, "Moving toward this stage of my life," which was very, very fun. But yeah, she's an incredible comedian writer.
Hey, Jerry, so. Now. I
love it. Miles, where can people find you? What is a tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. Also, the other show, 420 Day Fiance. Check us out at twitch.tv/420dayfiance, 420, with Sophie Alexandra. Talking about 90 Day, some tweets that I like. Wow, let's see. First one is from at 1-800-VIAGRA. You're in his DMs? Good for you, girl. He's easy. Go get him. Very, love that spin on it. Another one is from at Browtweeten, Browtweeten, tweeting, caterpillar walks, snake. Okay, what? Caterpillar grows wings, snake. Okay, what? Stupid. And then one more from a listener, DJ Baby Bok Choy at CR_BORON. Tweeted, not Miles and Jack roasting me alive, hey. Because showed all your Starbucks collector's mugs, like just sitting on this shelf. No shade. I love the Star Wars based ones. But yeah, it's a real movement. The Starbucks collector game.
They kept going and going. I was blown away. I've fully turned around on this, and I'm now in completely supportive of anybody's decision to collect those cups. They're
just don't
awesome.
Pay resale. Just don't pay resale. Mm-mm.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. A couple tweets I've been enjoying. Jamie Loftus at Jamie Loftus Help tweeted, I'm in the phase of getting my shit together where I'm adding a second ingredient to pasta, which is a very specific phase we've all been to. And Blank Pesh tweeted, why does Spellcheck know McConaughey, but not fuck? And I have never spelled Matthew McConaughey's last name correctly.
No.
It's
Naugahay. That's how
Now gee the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah. Hey, and if you want to add fuck, just put it in your one of your contacts. That
way
it knows.
Yeah. Interesting.
If you want fuck or fucking, all that stuff. Yeah. Rather than duck or ducking.
There you go.
Quick tip for the people who constantly curse and then get mad at the autocorrect because it's like duck.
Duck!
Autocorrect. Duck. And then all caps, fuck.
if
that's
prude.
Been you, yeah, get just add it to your contact. Prude. Yeah, fuck, fucking.
All right. Well, you can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about. in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might song? Enjoy.
Hey, there you go.
Miles, what song are we sending people to go check out?
This is a track called...
The Story of a Girl. Sorry.
Huh?
I was saying, this is the story of a girl.
Oh, around the whole world. No, this is the story of a song called Runway Talk, and it's by Khalil Blue featuring Mavi Dog. It's just a dope, you know, just rap from the 21st century. You know, I'm coming out of my golden era hip-hop cave more and more and just really ingesting as much like new rap as possible. And I just like, again, just like yesterday's track Armor, I really like this, the production on this, and I just like the flow, I like the swag, I just like it all. So, and I think you will too if you like some little, you know, some new genre breaking hip-hop. So this is Runway Talk by Khalil Blue.
All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning, but we are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.